Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Soulful, the podcast that reveals everything you ever wanted to know about sneakers, trainers, creps, whatever you like to call them. Hosted by me, Jason Coles, and of course, Mr. Kish Cash. How's it going, Kish?
Yo, Jace, I tell you, man, I'm all right. I'm good, thank you. And I really have to say, I'm enjoying this. You know, it's good to sort of be in a position where we can share knowledge. And I have to say, today, we're going to be chatting to who I consider, and I'm sure you agree as well, one of the greatest sneaker designers in history, which is mental, right?
Absolutely. There aren't too many alive or even dead, probably, who come to being as prolific as our guest today, yeah. You know, in terms of, you know, the brands he's worked for, the shoes mm-hmm. that he's responsible for. Mm-hmm. There's not many that can come close.
No. I actually, if you can please forgive me with the hip hop analogy, I look at him as the DJ Premier of sneaker design. Because
I'd go with that. Yeah, I mean, some of those shoes, you know, we're talking about the New Balance 997, yeah. I think the 574,
yeah,
Reebok Instapump,
yeah,
Air Max 2009. I mean, and that's probably just, you know, some of the few.
If
that wasn't enough,
yeah,
the guy is the head of design now for, you know, a certain hip hop superstar,
yeah,
you know, and responsible for probably the hypest of hype shoes at the moment.
Totally. I just want to know.
Maybe we should actually introduce the guy. Maybe we should say who it is.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to leave that to you. But the thing is, he's having a chat with and having to work with one of the most interesting characters within music as well. To follow up on what you just saying, and it'd be great to get an insight into that sort of mechanics, you know, the mechanics of how their relationship works and, you know, what happened and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a fascinating story. But yeah, we're going to be chatting to
Mr. Stephen Smith.
Ooh, yo, this is big. This is bigger than big.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I've got to say, this is probably one of the most excited, I've been for one of our podcasts. Yeah. Just because of, yeah, the legacy of this guy. So look, yeah. Listen, let's just cut to it. Cool. Without any further ado, Stephen Smith. So, Stephen, welcome to Soulful. It is absolutely amazing to have you come on the show. I mean, I can't tell you how excited both Kish and I are to have you. First things off, though, where did this whole crazy journey that you've had via, you know, some of the biggest sneaker brands in the world and some of the greatest sneakers in history, where did it all begin?
I was a bit of a sneaker junkie growing up. You had to choose wisely,
because
It was back to school season. So that's when you get your one new pair. So choose wisely. And it's kind of where I became a bit of a sneaker junkie. My parents were middle class, so we didn't have a ton of money. If you could justify it and get your one pair, you could get one really good pair. And then I went to art school at Mass College of Art and got a degree in product design, and my parents didn't know what the hell they were going to do with this kid with the art degree. And I was going to go be a Massachusetts state cop, but I was a half an inch too short for the academy at the time. They had a height requirement. So I went to art school, got my degree, graduated. My parents like, "You're going to get a job?" I'm like, I don't know. I don't know who's hiring, you know. There was a kid, Terry Highland, who was the year before me at Mass Art. Yeah. And he lived in Lawrence, Mass, and he wanted, you know, he heard New Balance was looking for like one of their first designers at the time. Because before that, they just used like artists and pattern people and stuff. They didn't actually use trained industrial designers per se.
Interesting.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So there was an opening, and then they hired one guy, and then Terry went and applied, and they had a hiring freeze. And so he was like, "Oh, well, I'll just start my own firm." So he started a consultancy doing graphics and product design and stuff. And then, so like a year later, they call him back and like, "Hey, we just opened up that headcount." And he's like, "Well, I started my own company, but I know this kid who's really good, who's just graduated. He always wore New Balances at school." And he's like, "Why don't you call him?" So they called me up and I went and interviewed the next day. It was funny, in college, I took a minor in interior design and architecture, which led to endless amounts of blueprint drawings. We were designing radio station interiors in Lowell, okay. Mass.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was like, why the hell am I doing all this architectural crap? I want to be a product designer. You know, but I realized these guys had their own firm, and that's how they paid the bills when there were no ID projects. They went and did architecture. But I had this meticulous portfolio of all of these mechanical drawings and blueprint drawings. And so when I interviewed at New Balance, they were like, can you do blueprint drawings? And I was like, can I do blueprint drawings? I just laid out all these architectural drawings. They're like, wow. And so it looked really good. It sounded really cool. There was only one other designer, me and this guy, Kevin Brown. And so New Balance, it was like 11:30. They're like, oh, interview's over. It's time to go running. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, we run every day at lunch at noon, you know?
I think everything was aligning. All these things were aligning at that moment for you.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So they're like, well, interview's over. We'll see you. Yeah. And we'll get back to you. So I went home and my parents like, well, how'd it go? I said, I think it went okay. You know, it seemed really cool. You know, it was Wall Street era, Reagan. Everybody's wearing 3-piece suits and ties on Wall Street.
Right.
And these guys are in T-shirts and jeans and a shitty old mill in Lawrence. Yeah. And I'm like, sweet, I like this.
Right? That's pretty chill. Yeah,
sounds good.
What sneakers were you wearing on your feet, though, during the interview?
My 990s, of course.
My man. Yes.
And there you go. They called me the next day and offered me the job. And I'm like, sweet. All right, sure. I had nothing else. Yeah. Sure, I'll do that.
So was it the drawings or was it the 990s that got you the job? You
know what I mean? I think it was a combination of everything. You know, being a runner, they loved that. I could do some really nice renderings. They like that. And so, you know, that kind of started my road into the madness of this as a career, you know? And growing up, my older brother wrecked all my toys. Mm-hmm. And so I spent a lot of time fixing them or figuring out how to put them back together. Fascinated by how to make it better, you know, how to make it work well, and how to not have it break. Because my brother smashed all my stuff. So I'm like, how can I make this stuff indestructible? And like, so I got there and it was a lot of fun, you know. It was a very small company at the time. It's very different. We had no seasons. In those days, you updated on, that shoe's getting a little old. We got to make a new one, you know. The technology has changed. We can mold a midsole now. So we went from the 990 to the 995 and then worked on the 996, molded and the end cap. And then the 996 was a big departure for New Balance. They were very conservative and angst ridden in that I did a 2-color blown EVA bottom for the sole. Ooh, you know, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
But you know, people forget that the things that we look at now 30 years later, that was state-of-the-art processes, and those shoes were highly technical running shoes. They weren't street fashion per se. I mean, it's shoes, so of course you wore them.
Yeah.
But purpose of them was, you know, make the best running shoes. And so that's what always drove me in my thinking, and that kind of shaped who I am and how I worked on a lot of the products.
Yeah, so what was the first shoe that you designed for New Balance then?
I did a set of perfs on the 995, just perforation details. So like, we need to finish this. And I was like, oh my God, I get to work on the update to the shoe that I run in. That's how cool is that?
That is mad. Yeah. That is mad. Definitely when you go back to your parents, see mom, see dad, I made it. Look, check it out.
It was pretty funny, you know, it was like a dream come true. Like I get to design something I love because all the other guys I went to industrial design school with, they all went to work for high-tech companies. So they were designing computers or medical devices and consultancies doing consumer product, other consumer products. And, you know, they would mock me. They're like, the sneaker designer. I'm like, well, you know, when you design something, you know, how many do they make? They're like 20. I said, who sees them? Like, well, you know, some guy in a lab. I'm like, well, when I design them, we do 20 to 100,000 and I can go anywhere in the world and see somebody who bought something I designed and appreciated my work. That's cool. It's till this day, it still excites me to see somebody in a pair or something I designed, I just want to go thank them.
It like, must be.
Thank you for appreciating and understanding my design.
I mean, New Balance weren't kind of known as being, a really creative company in terms of the, you know, colorways and designs. Were you the first guy that kind of came along and kind of shook that up a bit?
You know, it was kind of funny. I think back to like those early days of the 320 and the Super Cops, and those things were in pretty radical colors. And then it got super conservative by the time I got there with grays, navies, burgundy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brownie and I would design stuff in some colors like, whoa, hold on there, you know. even the 996 was controversial because it was a more silver gray than the kind of gunmetal gray that the 990 was. And they're like, ooh, it's too light. We don't know what the consumer is going to think. And you notice that 997 went kind of back to that darker shade of gray.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, if you look at the initial launches of it. So it was, and it was at that point, beginnings of my career too, became known as kind of disruptive in that, like, oh, you can't do that silver gray. And, you know, part of that's, I'm an old punk rocker, which then I was a young punk rocker. But I mean, all those things that I did at New Balance shaped how my brain functioned for the rest of my career, you know?
That's interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Performance-driven.
You mentioned that, you know, repairing, you know, the toys that your brother broke up affected the way that you thought. And I've heard that you're kind of a blend between an engineer and an artist. So, I mean, is it a case that you kind of think of function first and then form, or how does it work when you think that way?
The function drives the form. I mean, like, I can see the spirit on behind you there in the shot. And if you look at that, and I always show that image of how I designed it with a ghost image of the foot. I drew the shoe over the foot, and then marketing loved the idea so much. You know, if you look at it, the forefoot's open there right around the ball of your foot where your joints are.
Yeah.
Bottom and top. So we left the mesh out in that kind of elliptical panel there because that allows you flexibility. You have support and protection around the toe and the saddle area for pulling it. And then when you laced it, that strap that goes around to the heel kind of pulls your heel in across your to close your whole eye row and eye stay up across the top of the collar. But those areas, if you look at them, are based on your bone structure. You know, you have your toe bones, then you've got your central bones, then you have the main bones that go up through your foot. The Zoom bag is positioned like the fat pad in your heel. So when I showed the image to marketing, they're like, oh my God, this is so cool. So they went, and for the marketing campaign when they launched it, they had somebody put on the shoe and they put it, and they took an x-ray of their foot inside the shoe, and it looked almost identical to how I generated the first concept and sketch. When they distributed it, it came with this packet of x-rays with the shoe. I mean, it was so cool.
They've just retroed it, and I've got the OGs myself, and I started to wear them less and less over the years because I didn't want to mess them up, you know. It got to that stage, and now they can't really be worn because I think this is a PU cage, because this shoe still looks future to this day.
Does,
13 years later, it's mad, you know. That's and I didn't realize that you designed this.
Well, it was really funny, is that shoe was originally briefed for Japan for a half marathon and marathon racers. And, you know, the holes in the bottom were dictated by water stations along the route, so that if you poured the water on your head, which the Japanese like to do because it's super hot and humid, that the water could drain out of the shoe through the bottom.
These? Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That is genius.
So it's all function-based. But, you know, it was originally forecast for 40,000 pairs in the brief before I did the design. And then I did the design, and they showed it around when the first prototypes came in. And, you know, it went from this 40,000 pair niche to booked in at 800,000 pairs.
Whoa.
Wow.
Again, a lot of my designs are viewed as futuristic, but they work and they're real. You know, even when I drew them, they're never like fantastical, like look at this crazy futuristic drawing that'll never work. Because of those early days at New Balance, it's just ingrained in my DNA. When I draw it, it's going to work, even though it looks like it's from the future. I mean, Fury's another case in point, where people were scared shitless of that thing within Reebok.
That was bananas. Absolutely bananas.
And it's still looks futuristic today.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
It's incredible.
Well, we're gonna come to your whole Reebok period in a while. But
a lot of my roots are in the UK. You know, those early New Balances. They were made in Foonbi and Tralee, Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, Reebok, its roots in Foster's, being British out of Bolton.
Yeah.
So, you know, the UK has a part in my DNA and how I develop my career.
There's one question I've got. Yeah, totally. There's one question I want to know, because I've been chatting to some New Balance heads, right? And it concerns, you know, because Jason thinks you designed the 574. The guys that I've been chatting to, like my boy Richie, New Balance 365, he's insisting that you actually designed the 576. So what is it? What is the story?
So the 576 was the initial design, and the 574 was kind of like a dumbed down, accessible, lower cost version of it.
Yeah.
So it was both.
Yeah, they're the same shoe, and the 576 was built on the wider last. Mm-hmm. And the 574 was built on the narrower last. There was SL1 and SL2, which was straight last one and straight last two. We had three lasts, those two and CL1, which was the racing flat.
Right.
And back in those days, that was it. Three lasts. Everything was based on
them. That's crazy. So the thing is, so you did the 576, just to clarify, and then you dumbed it down to make the 574. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we did all kinds of crazy stuff. And actually, there was a guy, Jim Crawford, who was the development guy for all of the UK and European specialty project. Mm-hmm. So like he did all the soccer, fell running, orienteering, squash, and nobody ever had design time for him. So I would always like stay after work or work at lunch when there was too much snow to go running. And I would do all his shoes for him. So I ended up doing all of the soccer shoes for New Balance. I ended up doing orienteering and fell running. And that's where like the Trailbuster came from. That was going to be.
Love the Trailbuster. Fantastic shoe. Does that mean you actually designed the football boots for Brian Robson? Because I remember.
Wow.
The reason I wear New Balance, the reason I came across New Balance is because I'm a Manchester United fan, right?
Uh-huh.
Brian Robson. Brian Robson was my idol, because the thing is, the way he played, he was the captain of Man U and he's the captain of England, and the way he played, and he played in New Balance, and my older mate Robert, he was the first guy I ever knew to have a pair of New Balance, and I was chatting to him the other day, and he goes, why did we wear New Balance back in the day? He goes, don't you remember Brian Robson? And I was like, yeah, it was like a flashbolt that hit my head again. It was like, yeah, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. I worked on those cleats, and I did a 1500 soccer boot, 1500 tennis. I did those. Yeah, so there I did all kinds of sports. And they're, you know, a lot of those styles and models are forgotten.
They
focus on basketball and training shoes, not necessarily on the other sports. But guys like you can still remember them and go, holy crap, I remember that one.
Yeah. Pretty prolific in a short period of time at New Balance, it would appear. How long was your tenure at New Balance, by the way?
2.5 years.
So you did all that in 2.5 years?
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Did you ever sleep?
No, I like to, you know, I
was
I
you drawing
designing.
In your dreams or something like that?
Pretty much. You know, that's what Kanye and I talk about a lot. I told him, I said, we're both creative sharks. If we stop, we die. Right.
Totally.
So when you left New Balance and you headed over to Adidas, what was it like going from a US brand to a German one?
You know, it was different. My development guy left to go to Adi in New Jersey. And he's the one who brought me along. He's like, dude, you should come down here. And they gave me a good increase in pay, which was like, you know, that was cool. And it was, you know, thinking back to those days of the countries and SL72s. And I'm like, Adidas, man, this is like the next level. I mean, I love New Balance and I still do to this day. It's my origin, and I'm loyal to them and will help them at any time they ask. Man, Adidas, you know, that's the shit. So like Pele, and I'm like, oh my God, this is level.
Run DMC and that whole thing, you know, that was happening at that time. Yeah. I mean,
it was nuts. So I went there, the brand was in the toilet in the U.S. They were struggling. And I remember the first couple of weeks I went down. Again, there were only three of us in the whole design department in the U.S. And they showed us the first prototypes of the torsion shoes. And I was like, oh, these are cool looking, because they were some crazy colors. And yeah. But we put
all the ZX ones.
Yeah, and we put them on and they were hard as a rock. And,
right.
And we're like, nah, these aren't going to fly in the U.S. And so we had to go over to Germany and talk to them. And they were like, wow. Yeah, it's a perfect shoe for the Germans. You know, we run on the trail, you know, gravel and dirt and the clay. And we're like, yeah, well, we run on concrete and blacktop. And these things are like rocks. You know, and they look back at them now as these classics and all that. They didn't do well. It kind of bombed in the U.S. because they were so hard. The PU they used was so hard. I got to work on, like, there was a lower-priced version of torsion that had EVA midsoles. So I was working on those. All the Beckenbauer series. I did all the torsion cleats. Again, you know, doing football, which was
it seems to be a thing. Well, who did the Adidas Spectrum and the Adidas Tempest, two shoes that Adidas have got in their basketball archive that have never been reissued, and I still don't know why?
I'm going to guess probably Jacques Chasson.
Okay.
Jacques's done so many. I mean, he did the Phantom 1.
Right.
Which was huge.
Right. Yeah.
And then, of course, they freaked out when I did the Phantom 2 because it was so different.
Phantom 2 was dope. Yeah.
But, you know, that's, again, another icon. And so it's pretty cool. And then, like, just last year, early this year, Kid Cudi was looking for an Adidas shoe to do, and he grabbed the Artillery. I was like, dude, do you know that I did that one too?
Yeah.
That's mad. Because also Jeremy Scott did his own reinterpretation of the Artillery as well a few years ago, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. There's one of those floating around the Adidas Maker Lab. I see it all the time. It makes me laugh because these kids have no idea. Like, oh, look at that one. I'm like, yeah, the guy who decided to stand right next to you before you were born.
That's mad. To see that, do you know what I mean? To see the appreciation from, you know, a couple of generations away for your product. I mean, how does that feel?
It's pretty wild. You know, I mean, I love going to Japan and Asia and in general. I went, you know, Reebok's been generous in sending me to Tokyo and Singapore to kind of be their face of the history, which is kind of fun as they relaunch some of my styles. And it was pretty amazing to go to Tokyo, and my 34 years, half the sneaker wall in the stores is my stuff. It's crazy. You know, amazing. I mean, and to see stuff that I designed at New Balance right out of college, competing with my Nike stuff, competing with my Adidas stuff, competing with my Yeezy stuff. It's a kind of madness when you sit and look at it and you're like, wow, that's crazy. You know, I mean, like I said, I always try to do the right thing, and all of those appear to have been the right thing because they've had a life of their own, like your children that grew up, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really cool. It's really cool to see it. Because, yeah, I'm just a goofy kid from Boston, but I was good at what I did. You know, still good at what I do, as proof by a lot of the Yeezy stuff that's been coming out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, totally.
Yeah,
totally.
There's certainly a few people out there who think so. Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah,
exactly. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Going back to that Adidas time, you're working there. Did you see something that you was going like, oh man, I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd designed that.
Yeah, you know, there was a shoe called the Regatta, and it's a real obscure sailing shoe. Hmm. And I love that thing. I still have a pair of them.
I don't even know what that shoe is. Yeah, I don't even know what that shoe is. I didn't even know Adidas did sailing stuff. It's kind of crazy.
Well, you know what's funny is they made a shoe for everything. When I got there, I'm like, holy shit, they make a shoe for everything. You get the catalog and this, you know, everything. And so later when I was working at Nike, when we did all the shoes for Beijing, they signed the Chinese Olympic team, not knowing like what the catalog was that Adidas did before that. And I'm like, oh boy, they're in for a shock. So they didn't have a dedicated department to do all the Olympic stuff. I mean, there were a few of us that did the track and field and those events, but all of a sudden they're like, holy shit, we got to make equestrian boots and we got to make wushu martial arts shoes and shooting shoes. And so they're like, what are we going to do? You know, we also have to double our design team. So what they did is they asked any one of us, would you, any of you interested in these sports, will you volunteer to help on the side? And so that's what we all did. I mean, I was already doing the track and field, and I was like, well, I got some guns. I'll do the shooting shoes, you know? And so I did the Olympic shooting shoes, and then the U.S. and China both got gold medals in them. So I'm like, okay, that job well done again, you know?
I mean, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's kind of what you want to do at the end of the day, is enable the athlete to achieve their best performance and greatness. So that's the ultimate satisfaction. Yeah, I mean, that's like that the Zoom Spectrum.
Yeah.
Did that for Japanese Ekiden racing teenage boys, and Paula Radcliffe goes and breaks the women's world record in half marathon and marathon in them. I'm like, okay, cool. You're a big gonky English woman, but if it worked for you, perfect. You know.
Well, Kish and I were talking about that earlier because I actually used to work for Paula Radcliffe's management at the time.
I love her. She's such a sweetheart.
Yeah, no, she's great. But I still remember watching that 2003 London Marathon in, you know, those crazy shoes with the flames on them. And, you know, she wins it and sets a new world record in them. So yeah, that must feel pretty good when someone does something special like that in your shoes.
Then she took them off her feet, signed them, wrote the time, and handed them to me.
Oh
wow.
Really?
Incredible.
Yeah, they're down in my basement.
Wow.
Amazing.
But they might have smelled a little bit funky after she took them off the feet. Hopefully they've sort of like the aroma has, you know, dissipated.
Yeah, they're
since
all right.
Yeah. Yeah?
After 26 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool, you know. What was the next step and why?
Well, it turned into a bit of a shit show. You know, they're
right.
They were still struggling in the US. You know, people look at Run DMC as this amazing time. It was a blip. And because we were based central to New York City, we spent a lot of our time catering to the New York City kids, and they're very fickle. You know, we were hot and then we were not.
Right. Yeah.
And when you've catered to the city and the city drops you, you got nothing. You know, we had put a lot of the focus into the street kids, and performance kind of disappeared, and you didn't have that in the U.S. as a rep to back yourself up with. So one Friday, they came in from Germany and let go half the office.
Oh,
whoa.
And I was like, holy shit, this is kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
And the next Friday, they came in and let go half of the half. So you were down to a quarter of the original staff 2 weeks later.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they came in the black leather coats and they were like, yeah. the company is bleeding as the jugular. You can risk staying working at Adidas US, but we will shut it down eventually, sooner than later, or you can move to Germany.
Okay.
We're going to get in trouble for this, Kish.
I'm like a 23-year-old kid. I'm like, yeah, Nuremberg doesn't look so exciting. So in the meantime, Steve Burris, who I worked with at New Balance on the 1500 and 997, he had left and had gone to Reebok and was trying to start up this new idea of an advanced concepts group. So I went and interviewed, and then again, you know, got the job 2 days later. That began the journey into Reebok. And one of the shoes that I saw while I was at New Balance changed my entire mentality of things, and that was the sock racer that Bruce Kilgore did.
Wow.
When I saw that thing, I was like, holy shit, that's from the future. That's something I've never seen before. That's what I wanted to create when I got to this team at Reebok, is they put us together. So it was kind of funny that, you know, I was recruited for it. Litchfield was recruited out of the research lab. Peter Foley was recruited out of marketing, but he actually had a background in biomechanics. They kind of threw us together. As we always called ourselves the Land of Misfit Toys, because those two kind of got orged out of jobs and got landed into this job with all of us. And Litch was working on the pump just by default because nobody else knew what they were doing. I got there and pump one was in probably three quarters done, but it was going on sidetracks. And
with the basketball one, the big basketball chunky one, yeah, that one.
Yeah, the first one.
The original, yeah, pump. And then did the court victory, the Michael Chang one, come in after that, or was it around the same
That was later. Ralph Zerner was designing that one. So, you know, kind of our job as we built this team was to build the first of the things.
Yeah.
You know, because that's always the hardest, is it's easy to update something once the ground has been broken. But once you make the first one, you know, we had to make this shoe that inflated. And it was hard.
I mean, even now when you look back at it, you look at it, it's bonkers. Do you know what I mean? It really is. It's like insane. What an amazing piece of technological engineering for the foot.
You think about it, Ed. We made all of those pump units in the U.S. in Massachusetts. Part price for that thing was $15 just for the pump mechanism. And then you had to build a shoe around it. So, you know, you look at people now like FOBs, $20. Like, oh my God, that's so high. It's like that component was almost $20. And we still had to build an awesome basketball shoe around it. So it was pretty phenomenal to have pulled that thing off. You know, once that thing opened the door, it was time to explore of what pump could become, where Hexalite could go. So we basically took the remnants of the ATG group and the bits and bobs they made, and we're like, okay, how can we take all these bits and bobs and build concept cars for them?
Yeah.
And so I did, when I first got there, they were still trying to formulate the team, so they kind of threw me into basketball for 2 weeks. And I was like, yeah, I don't belong in this. So they moved me into cross training, and I did cross training for a season while they were still trying to hash out the org and the structure and financing and everything of this new team.
I remember some Reebok cross trainers. They did some phenomenal ones. Was it the AXT and the CXT and things like that?
Yeah, I did a bunch of the CXTs and CXT pump. So from there, they finally got the team formulated. Early 91, I did a whole series of concept sketches to show Paul Fireman, like, what kind of things we could make. And he was like, wow, this stuff's so futuristic. This is what I want you guys doing. You know, and we got a bigger budget. We started to get our own equipment and our shop. And we hid out with apparel, so nobody knew where we were. So over in this corner behind all the apparel women were these weirdos making these contraptions that would become shoes, you know?
Yeah.
So it was cool because nobody knew who we were because we were down in apparel. Nobody knew what we did.
Yeah.
So nobody paid attention to us. So we could isolate and create these amazing things. And that's what Paul Fireman wanted. And so then, you know, once we started to make these next generations of pump and Graphlite, and Fireman was like, what do you guys need next? And, like, well, we need to grow. So they got us our own building just to the side of the main Reebok building. And so Fireman was like, I want you guys in there. You guys can just dream in blue sky and just create. And he goes, I want it locked down with key card access only. You know, this is like 92.
So it was almost like a Reebok skunk work.
Yeah. It totally was.
Yeah.
And so we hid off campus and Fireman was like, I want it locked down. You guys are the only ones allowed in. And he goes, public enemy number one, who's never allowed in to have a key card, is myself. He goes, because I'll come in and I'll see all the cool stuff you're doing and I want it early and I'll spoil it. And he goes, I want you to do it right and I want you to take the time.
He must have been an amazing boss. I mean, to have someone like that, amazing.
It was a pretty amazing time because Fireman himself, you know, he was this dreamer. He was a sales guy. You know, he liked money. He liked to make lots of money. But he knew that this idea of like turning us loose opened new doors to things. And he was an amazing stream of consciousness thinker where he'd just say stuff and you'd be like, oh, that's really cool. And then he'd go, well, go make it. And we're like, okay, game on, you know, hold my beer, let's go. all the pump advancements came from airplane emergency life preservers that could take those pressures to be inflated rapidly. The Instapump came from mountain biking technology for inflating your tires on the trail. The carbon fiber from the carbon fiber arch and the Hexalite came from aerospace. You know, the guys we worked with to make the first carbon fiber arches were the guys who made the SR-71 for Lockheed Skunk Works.
Wow.
You know, for me.
So it really was the Skunk Works.
Oh, yeah. So for me, as like a technical industrial, you know, pure industrial design geek, I'm like, holy shit, I'm working with these old dudes who built the SR-71. How cool is that?
I mean, yo, it is the coolest. I mean, you look at that plane and you're just thinking, I was talking to Jace about it the other day, and it's just like, yo, this plane, I wanted to go in it. I'm scared of heights, but...
I was lucky enough to... I got to know one of the pilots really well, called Brian Shaw, who's... after this, you got to look him up, Stephen. He's a really inspirational guy. But I went out to see him. He lives near Sacramento, near Beale Air Force Base, where the plane used to fly. And so I got right up to the plane. And when you actually see it in person, it looks supernatural. You know, it's almost like it's something from the 23rd century that somehow landed here.
Yeah, I've seen five of them.
Right. Wow.
At the different air museum. Yeah, it's like a goal of mine to see as many as I can as I traveled around the U.S. to go to the different air museums.
Then we've
got one right here in McMinnville. And then there's another one up in Seattle. Then there's the one in San Diego. I saw one at SAC in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Amazing.
Amazing.
I'm so jealous of both of you.
Well, I can understand, how something like that would inspire you to create something like the Instapump Fury, because you know that's a piece of 23rd century technology that somehow landed in the 20s.
That's right. It looks like a fighter jet. It really does. It looks very aggressive in its profile and its, you know, all the panels, etc.
You know, I love machines, and it was an exercise in building a machine for running, and very Bauhaus. If you look at it, there's not a piece on it that you can take off and the shoe will still work. If you took any of the components off it, the shoe won't work anymore. That's what was amazing about it. It was just condensed to just what you need. The typical shoe had 150 to 200 components with all the reinforcers and foams and stitching. And we took all that stuff out and made the pump do it all. By doing that, you take, you know, all of those costs of those components cascades to the FOB of the shoe. And basically what we're able to do is to take all of those 30 components that we eliminated, add that amount up, and reinvest it in the higher tech expensive component of the pump bladders and the carbon fiber pieces.
Yeah.
So that reduction allowed us the same amount of money to build this super high tech thing from the future with all of these technical components on it. So it was really cool. I mean, it was...
it's like you rebalancing the shoe, you know, the...
What was going to come after that was this totally reduced one. I had the shoe down to five components.
Whoa.
And
part
of that was robotics and automation we were looking at in 94, 95.
Okay.
And it was funny. I proposed it to the head of product at Reebok at the time, who's like, yeah, that's cool and all that, but can you just make a princess for 5 cents less? No, that's, you guys do that. You're in line.
Yeah.
We prepare the future, and this is the future.
People forget about the colorway that shoe came in as well. That incredible yellow and red, the kind of like day glow,
you know,
luminous, was just like, there was nothing like that.
It was totally... in your face.
It's
Never Mind the Bullocks. That's what it is. It's the cover from Never Mind the Bullocks.
Really?
Is that the inspiration? Amazing.
Yeah.
Never knew.
Wow.
That.
You
incredible.
Know, that's the pink and the green, but it was the yellow and the red. That and the Super Cop. You know, the Super Cop, the shoe that I always wanted that I couldn't have, looked like fire. Because the Super Cop went from red to orange to yellow, like your feet were on fire. And I remember it as a teenager, seeing the fast kids running them, and their feet looked like they were on fire. And so the Fury kind of became that same kind of representation of fire on your feet.
I've seen so many iterations of it, and I'm always amazed at how that shoe can be, because it's a complex shoe, really, in comparison to, say, like a Converse All-Star or something like that that's had iterations. And you see all these different executions, you know, from the Vetmont one to the Bathing Ape one to whatever. And I'm always astounded at how amazing that shoe still looks.
You know, a complete holistic design. And the Fury's just an extension of those New Balance days, you know, have this complete holistic design. And it just naturally takes the colors and materializations that way, as wacky and crazy and futuristic as it is. And they'll do the same with that Spiridon, you know, as Nike pimps that thing out. That was like one of the biggest battles of my career was that thing. I basically sacrificed my career at Reebok over that shoe because I believed.
Really?
Wow.
I believed in it. You know, I got in so many fights. I got labeled to be such an asshole. But I don't care, you know, because like I always say.
Sometimes you have to be to get what you want.
It wasn't what I want. It's what I knew was right. And it's what Paul Fireman told me to do. Assign me the mission and tell me this is what we're doing. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You're not sidetracking me. You're not taking me over here. We're not going to take this little pathway over here. I'm going to point B where you told me.
Right.
And if there's rubble that I leave in my wake, so be it. I got to point B like you told me to.
What was Paul Fireman's take on it then when you showed him this shoe?
Holy shit, that thing's incredible. This is what we should be doing. So, you know, he did see it because we had checkpoints with him along the way. And he was like, keep going, keep going. You know, this thing's amazing. And the marketing guy, it was funny, he was after me, but he came from New Balance, who was inline running. Fireman said, okay, it's time to start thinking about getting this thing to market. You know, go talk to the inline guys and let them know it's coming. So we showed it to him and he's like, whoa, I can't sell this thing. It's too loud, obnoxious. Can't you do it in blues and grays?
And then you go,
snap down.
We're not New Balance, mate.
That's what I said. I said, we're not at New Balance anymore, dude. You're in the big league. You're at Reebok. You know, this is risk taking. This is different. You know, and he's like, well, I can't sell it in those colors. So that's where I took a pair and I went home. And I sprayed it with gray automotive primer top to bottom. And I went in there and I flung it on his desk. I'm like, is this what you want? Oh, yeah, that I can sell. You know, and I'm like, you just don't fucking get it. You just don't get it. No. Yeah. And he just.
Is that why the blue, gray, black?
Exactly.
You go, this is the one I like, and I'm giving you this one as well.
Yeah.
Right.
So I went up to see Fireman and I was like, hey, Paul. You know, because in those days you could just go, do you know this shoe? Oh, yeah, it's all amazing, you know. And I said, well, you know, the marketing guy, he's just kind of giving me pushback on the colors and all that. And he goes, what? These are the colors it needs to be in. You know, it's the way it's been since the beginning. It creates all the excitement around it. And I said, well, he said, and I said, what do you think? And he goes, well, you fucking tell him that these are the colors that we're doing. You know, it was days before PC and it was raw and real. You know, people just let it roll. I'm like, can I coach on that? He goes, yeah. So I go back to the marketing guy and I show it to him. I said, hey, you know, this color. He goes, yeah, you know, we'll do it. But you wait. It'll be 60-40 split. We'll do the gray and the blue one at 60% of the bookings. And if we're lucky, 40% of that red, yellow, black colorway. Yeah. And I said, well, I went up to talk to Paul Fireman about it. Excuse me. And he's like, you did? And I said, yeah. He goes, what did he say? I said, you really want to know what he said? And he goes, yeah. He said, you're fucking doing it. I was like, dude almost had a seizure, you know? And, and he goes, well, you wait. You mark my words on those colors, right? And so they sent it out to the accounts and it booked in the complete opposite of like 60% the red, yellow, black and 40% the boring blue, gray, black one. And I was like,
I still remember when I saw that shoe and I was like, what the hell is this shoe? I mean, I was just like, I don't know. What do I do with it? Do you know what I mean? It was just incredible. Yeah. It really was. What is the best version of the Instapump Fury that you've seen?
They did the one that was the ice cream colorway. I finally got a pair, but they're not in my size. One of my fans actually sent me a pair. It's orange, yellow, and green. It looks like the ice cream. That's my favorite.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
That's the sneakers and stuff collaboration, right?
Yeah, that's
Peter and Eric, good friends of mine, did that shoe. I remember I was at this trade show in, I think it was in Germany, right? Bread and Butter or one of those things, yeah? And I remember seeing this shoe literally 100 meters away. And I was going, what are those, right? Yeah. I could see the colors, right? I'm just like, oh my God, what's going on over here? As they get closer, I'm like, no way. Like that, like jaw dropping, like, oh my God, it's the Pump Fury. They are sick. They're absolutely hard as hell, right? And then I speak to Peter. I go, oh man, did you see those shoes? And he goes, yeah. And I go, they're amazing. He goes, thanks. He goes, we did them. We did them. And I was like, what? And he goes, yo, come with me. We left the trade show. He walked all the way to the hotel in Alexanderplatz. And he came, he went up the stairs. He came, you know, he went up the lift, came down with the shoes. And I was the first dude to have those shoes out of the sneakers and stuff, wow. Crew. And I was like, wow, Peter, yeah. You are, I couldn't believe it.
It's still one of my favorites, you know, and then it ended up in the London Design Museum and then mm-hmm. it's in the Smithsonian. Yeah, it's obviously yeah. it's in the Bada Shoe Museum. It was yeah. also in the big rise of sneaker culture that Elizabeth Samelheck put together that toured around the right. world. Pretty monumental. I mean, it's nice to see it acknowledged as this, not just as a sneaker, but as this piece of product design history. You know, I mean, it was really cool.
Definitely. Yeah.
And, you know, and the same people that gave me crap internally at Reebok who fought it all the way are forgotten. And
Yeah, exactly.
You should have put money on it.
One of you two guys, between you and the marketing guy, went on to have a career. I wonder what happened to the other guy.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure where he ended up. Real estate or something? I don't know.
Kish, that was pretty amazing. I mean, I didn't think we were going to get all that out of Steve. I mean, this guy's just on another level. I mean, you know, there's just no one really apart from maybe Tinker Hatfield who is on Stephen Smith's level. I mean, what do you think?
I have to agree. I mean, talk about how many knowledge bombs that were dropped in that and things that we didn't even know or aware of. And his legacy, I mean, you know, starting from 1985, was it? New Balance, all the way to the Reebok Instapump Fury, which is still one of the most incredible looking shoes ever.
But, you know, some of the New Balance models that he came up with, yeah. those are still the bedrock of New Balance today.
And agreed.
The guy was in his early 20s.
He's like a child prodigy. You know, insane, yeah. absolutely insane. You know what I mean? We've spoken to him at length, though, haven't we, really? Because we couldn't get it all in. This is just half the story. We're going to have to hold it there. We're going to have to get the listeners to tune in next week to go from, as you say, the Grant Hill years, Fila years, all the way through to Mr. Kanye West. It's going to be epic.
It will be absolutely epic. So please join us again for episode 2.